Good morning, and welcome to the 2014 Retail Marketing Virtual Conference and Expo. I'm Joe Keenan, Managing Editor of Retail Online Integration. I'm pleased to welcome you to this session, Generating More Revenue from Email, Fresh Ideas for Retailers. This session is being sponsored by SDL, a provider of web content management, analytics, social intelligence, campaign management, and translation services. Here today to discuss how you can optimize your email program for increased subscriber engagement and revenues is Jeannie Jennings, who is the Vice President, Global Strategic Services at Alchemy Works, the world's largest email marketing agency. Before we get started, let me review some technical pointers. First, if you have any technical issues, troubleshoot by clicking on the widget at the bottom of the console marked with a question mark, or let us know via the question and answer box. You can also use the Q&A box to submit your questions to today's panelist. We'll be addressing select questions later on, but you can send them in at any time. Please make sure you turn off any pop-up blockers on your computer so that you can utilize all of the features on this console. Check out the Tips for Attendees widget if you'd like to learn about the console you're viewing on today. Finally, if you would like to view this session again later, don't forget that we'll be archiving the entire show today. We'll have the on-demand environment up and running for 3 months beginning on Monday, July 21st. Watch your email for more details. Without further ado, I'd like to welcome Jean Jennings to get us started.
Hi, everybody. Thanks so much for joining us today. I'm Jean Jennings. Very excited to be talking to you. Done a lot of work for a lot of great companies over my 20-plus years in the industry. And just really happy to be presenting to you some ideas. I'm hoping that out of this you get at least one and maybe two or three great ideas that you can test with your own email marketing program. So just a little bit about me. I've always been focused with email marketing on really the bottom line. So one thing you're going to notice as we walk through it is I like opens and clicks, but I like revenue and conversions a lot more. And I think that what I found with my clients is that's really the best way to make email marketing effective is to really focus on the bottom line. So let me talk to you a little bit about what the description said. I always do this to try to keep myself honest. I promised that we would cover click and open reach, which is different than click and open rate. So we're going to talk about that. We're also going to talk about testing to boost your ROI, your return on investment, which again, revenue is near and dear to my heart. Finally, we're going to talk about the nudge effect and attribution models, because one thing we've seen with email is there is a tremendous nudge effect, and if you're not taking that into account, you're probably missing some of the benefit of your email marketing program. And then in general, I just wanted to provide you some new ways to analyze your marketing efforts and think about them, as well as some fresh ideas for generating more revenue. So without further ado, let's jump in and talk about open and click reach. You may be familiar with open and click rate. Open rate being opens divided by the number of emails sent minus the known bounces. Click rate being the number of unique clicks, one click per person, that the email received, again, divided by not the opens but by the quantity sent minus the number of bounces. Open and click reach are a little bit different. Open and click reach really talk about over a certain period of time, and it could be a week, or a month or a quarter, over that period of time, what percentage of your list has opened at least an email or clicked on at least one email. So really, open and click reach are more aggregate figures, and what they tell you is how much of your audience is engaged with your email. So typically, the higher your reach, the more effective your email marketing program is. You're going to want to measure it, as I said, by week or by month or by quarter. A lot of how you measure it depends on your frequency. So, for instance, if you're only sending one email a month, you wouldn't be able to do a weekly reach. Some weeks you wouldn't have an email sent. If you're doing three emails a week, it makes a lot of sense to do a weekly reach. If you're only sending one email a week, your open and click reach are going to be the exact same as your open and click rate, so it's not really very useful. So what you want to do is choose a period of time when you have at least 3 emails that have been sent, possibly more. That would be the minimum amount of time that I would do click reach for. The way you calculate click reach is, again, over those multiple mailings, you want to count the unique people on your list who received them that opened it. Unfortunately, this isn't a number that a lot of email service providers provide you automatically. It's something that you really need to pull the data and do a merge purge, knocking up the open and click lists from each of the sends to figure out the unique people. So it takes a little bit of effort to calculate, but it's very, very doable. And it's something that I highly recommend. It's something that we do for a lot of our clients. It's also important to note that reach is also related to inactive. So typically, the higher your open reach, the lower your inactives will be. Inactives meaning people who haven't opened or clicked on an email in a given period of time. So reach is also a good way to kind of keep track of how you're engaging with people, how many people are kind of going dormant on you, and it sort of try to keep a certain level. There aren't really, as with open and click rates, there aren't any, you know, this is best or this is good or this is bad or this is where it has to be. Every organization's open and click reach numbers are going to be different. I don't like to compare them to one another or to other organizations. What I like to do is compare them internally. So getting a baseline now and then seeing if you can improve on that going forward. Now, that said, we do know what a good ratio of click to open reach is, which would be 50%. So if your open reach, let's look at a month's period when you're sending, say, 2 emails a week. If your open reach is 50%, you would want your click reach to be at least 25%. So that we do know. This next slide just, again, gives you, so the next question is, so that's great, Jean, you've just told us about open and click reach, and you've told us how to calculate it. What impacts it? If we wanted to get our open and or our click reach up, how would we go about that? So I would say the number one thing that impacts open and click reach is frequency. Sending more frequently tends to have a positive impact on your click reach and on your open reach. Because the more you send, the more people are going to have an opportunity to open and click on your emails. So that's one thing that has a tremendous impact on reach, and that's probably the number one thing. So am I now saying that you should send 5 emails a day in order to get your open and click reach up? I'm not. Because obviously, as with everything, there's a balance. So how do you determine what that frequency should be? I get this question a lot when I speak live, and it's a good question, but it's a very hard question to answer because there isn't really any set frequency that is the best for everyone. There's no one-size-fits-all. It really has to do with the relationship you have with your subscribers. And even then, what I've found with my clients is within your subscriber list, there's probably different segments. And those different segments often have different optimal frequencies. An example I use a lot when I speak is I'm a big online shopper. I do most of my shopping online. I have the brands that I know and like. I know my size is there, so it makes it very easy to order online and then just return either online, through the mail or to the store, the things I don't want. There are brands, for instance, Ann Taylor is one, where I shop very frequently. I am happy to get those emails every day, and they do pretty much send every day. If you look at this slide I have in front of you, I actually did a very unscientific study of my inbox, and in the month of June, Ann Taylor sent me 37 emails. So it pretty much is every day, and sometimes there's more than one a day. I am more than happy to receive them. There are people on that list, and the person who I think of is my brother, who's married, and my sister-in-law is awesome, and she also shops at Ann Taylor, and I don't know if he's on the list, but if he were, I would bet that he would not want to be receiving emails from Ann Taylor every single day, because although he, I'm sure, buys stuff there for her, it's more around her birthday and holidays and things like that. So you want to keep that in mind when you're putting together your email program and your frequency. Anything you can do to kind of segment that list to find out a little bit more about the person's relationship with your brand and with your products can go to frequency. So think about that. And the example I gave is pretty basic, the idea of someone who's shopping for themselves versus someone who's, you know, gift-giving. And there might be other segments, but definitely think about that. The best way to determine what your frequency should be is to do some tests with treated versus untreated. So the idea here is the treated would be take your email list, take, say, half of it or a portion of it, and set it aside and don't email on some of these sends and email to the rest of the list. And then do some analysis, again, over time, over the course of a month or a quarter to see what the spends for those two groups are. Initially, when you increase your frequency, especially in a retail environment, you're probably going to see additional revenues come in, and that's a good thing. But you also have to think about share of pocketbook, and there probably comes a point where the people you're sending to are simply, they've used up their budget for your product for that month or for that quarter, and they're simply not going to buy anymore. So that's the idea, is hitting that fine point where they still have money to spend, you're still going to generate revenue, where you're not over-mailing to the point that you've either annoyed them and they don't want to buy from you anymore, or they're just simply, for that period of time, you know, out of dollars to spend. So really think about that. Do some testing. Make sure that you keep your bottom line goal as your key performance indicator. In the retail world, for our clients, it's typically revenue. You may have a different bottom line goal. Whatever that is, that's what you really want to go by to determine what your best frequency is. A mistake that I see some clients make is focusing on things that you should watch, but that aren't necessarily key performance indicators. Things like spam complaints and unsubscribe. So, for instance, you might say, well, when we increased our frequency, the unsubscribe rate, we lost more people that month, and therefore we're not going to do it. But the point is, if you made enough money to overcome the average value of a subscriber, you're still doing well in the end. So make sure you watch things like spam complaints. Obviously, they're important. You don't want to get blacklisted. Make sure you watch things like unsubscribes. But make sure that you understand that really your bottom line goal is generating more revenue. And so as long as you're more on the plus side than on the negative side, there's a value there. But do increase frequency carefully. If you do it haphazardly without a lot of thought behind it, you can cause some real damage. The other thing I wanted to mention here is we did an audit for a client recently, and you know what we found was there were certain types of emails that they were sending that were more likely to get people who hadn't opened or clicked in a while to open. And they weren't necessarily targeted reactivation emails, but they were emails that had, in this case, you know, a lot of content. So the idea being that, and they weren't retail, but they are an online site that features, they're sort of a go-between. They send people to retail to buy. And so what we found was things that had a lot of different images, a lot of different products in them would appeal and people would open and get engaged with them again. So that's another thing you can do when you're thinking about frequency and when you're thinking about open and click reach is try to focus on emails that are more likely to pull in people who haven't opened recently. And if you look and you do some analysis on your list, like I said, with this client, we're able to figure out which ones helped toward this goal and which ones didn't. So that's another way to try to increase your open and click reach. When you start thinking past open and click rates into reach, it's when you can really, it's a very powerful concept. It's when you can really start moving the needle for your list. The next thing I wanted to talk to you about was boosting return on investment, ROI. Again, near and dear to my heart, revenue. So this is actually a chart. My timing was actually awesome because it was just published yesterday by Epsilon. It's their Q1 2014 Trends and Benchmark Report. And it's nice now. They've added tracking of triggered messages. Triggered messages are anything that's automated. So it could be a welcome message. It could be any kind of trigger you have set up. I know in retail a lot of people now are doing abandoned cart. The other thing that people in retail are doing that's fascinating to me, and I think I've seen it work very well, is the idea of browse triggers. So if you see someone who's browsing a certain thing and they don't buy, even if they don't put it in their cart, you could follow up with an email. Triggered messages, much better performance than standalone manual messages. Open rates are about 64% higher on average. Click-through rates over double. So if you're not using some strategic triggered messages for your email program, you really want to think about incorporating them because they can be really useful. And again, the key is finding, I did a project like this for Consumer Reports a few years back, identifying opportunities where an automated message would be appropriate and then prioritizing them based on the potential for revenue. So the work I did for Consumer Reports, we were actually looking at people on the website and how they interacted with the website and how they interacted with the email, and we identified certain points where they might be more likely to either subscribe or renew or add on a product. So take a look at opportunities there. I wanted to show you a case study, which is for an e-commerce client that I did. Again, talking about triggered messages, this is work that was done on a welcome message. So this is a really rough wireframe color-coded of their existing welcome message when I came in. They were trying to do content marketing, and so the welcome message referenced a tip that they could get if they clicked through, but it didn't tell them what that free tip was, what that content was. It just sort of mentioned it. And so that was the current control. It was actually generating absolutely no revenue and no conversion. So they were very upset about this. What I did is I turned that welcome email into a much more robust piece. We actually pulled the tip into the body of the email. So the dark blue here is information, and we pulled the full content of the tip, and we actually fleshed the tip out more. It was a way to actually improve your golf swing because this was a golf e-commerce company. The light blue in the middle was actually a visual, so we actually gave them a visual of how they were to hold the club to improve it and how their swing could be improved. The peach areas here are actually promotional. So what we did was, the idea was it was a free tip, and it was something you could do and you would get value from if you didn't purchase, but there was a tool you could buy that you could use in your office or at home that would help you improve your swing, help you understand how to grip the club and how to swing through. So the peach here, the dark peach, is actually promotional copy for that product. This light peach area here is actually a picture of the product. And then this light peach area right here, this actually are testimonials for the product. So what we really did was pull a lot of content that was on the website right into the email to bring it front and forward to get people to engage with it right away. The results on this were actually tremendous. We actually, revenue per non-bounce email went from nothing to 97 cents. So 97 cents doesn't sound like much, but imagine if every welcome message you sent generated almost a dollar in revenue. That could be a tremendous boost to your bottom line. The conversion rate went from nothing to 1.5%. So 1.5% of the people that received that welcome message were actually purchasing from it. Welcome messages are really critical to success, and if you're looking to boost your bottom line revenue, I would start by taking a look at your welcome messages. If you're not offering them something in the welcome message, if you don't have some sort of discount or some sort of special deal, I would definitely put one in. If you got one of those in, I would look at how it's doing and I would see what you could do to bump it up. Welcome messages are key because these are new people to your list. They've recently raised their hands to have a relationship with you. They are eager to learn more about your brand. They are actually typically eager to spend money with you. And what you need to do is make it as easy as possible for them to do that. I think of welcome messages really as a way to delight people, as a way to start that relationship on the right foot. What you really want to do is pull them in and engage them. And again, you're trying to build a habit, and that habit you're trying to build is them buying from you, either online or in the store. So think about what you can do in that welcome message to drive them to your store, to drive them back to your site, to give them some sort of a discount or some sort of a deal, or even just a reason to buy. There's so much you can do with welcome messages, and these people are just there in their honeymoon period with your brand, and so you really want to take advantage of that. It's a very, very critical time in a relationship. I also wanted to talk to you a little bit about the inactives on your list, because that's another place, another source of revenue that a lot of companies either don't fully take advantage of, or sometimes they miss it altogether. Inactive is defined as someone who hasn't opened or clicked on your email in a given period of time. So, again, a lot of it depends on frequency. If you only send once a month, we would probably consider them inactive after maybe 3 months of no opens, no clicks, no activity, 3 months or more. If you're sending on a daily basis, it would probably be more like 2 weeks, or maybe as long as a month, but it would be a much shorter period that you'd want to take a look at. There's sort of a thing in email marketing, inactives. They put you at a little higher risk for spam complaints. So kind of the rallying cry for years, like forever, has been to remove them from your list and stop sending to them because of the risk of deliverability. And I understand that risk. I totally get it. Nobody wants to be blacklisted. I've always sort of felt like I needed to balance that with the business interests of first when I was in-house my business, because I was responsible for the bottom line, and then for my clients when I went on my own and now that I'm with Alchemy Works. And I think there's a way to do that. And I think the way to do that is to typically with inactives, what I do with my clients is we don't stop mailing them all together. We just decrease the frequency on them. And we take some other precautions. We move them to a separate IP address so that if, heaven forbid, there are spam complaints and it gets blacklisted, it's not going to affect the rest of your mailing. And so this is actually a case study that Alchemy Works did for WeDad, which is a retail client of ours years back, where they started resending to inactive subscribers. So the active subscribers, this was over roughly the same period, although one is 7 weeks and one was six. And what you're going to see is that, so the active subscribers had a pretty good open reach during that period, 10%, a pretty good click reach during that period, 2.2%, click to open reach was 22%, so that's lower than we would like to see. Conversion rate was 0.13%. Now, you're going to look at the inactive subscribers here, and you're going to see their metrics aren't nearly as good as the active subscribers, but what you're going to see when we add on the conversion rate, the cart conversion rate and the revenue, is that even though fewer of those people purchased, the people that did purchase looked a lot like the active subscribers. They had almost the same cart conversion rate, and they had almost the same average order value, a little bit less, but not that much. So in this case, they weren't completely inactive, and it probably does make sense to mail them. So what I always do with my clients, and this is something you can very easily do, is you want to figure out where your break-even is. You want to figure out how large your inactive list is right now, and you want to figure out what kind of a conversion rate based on slightly less than your standard average order for your actives, what kind of a conversion rate you need to break-even. And if you think that that's attainable, then you should mail those inactives. And what you can also look at is, again, it might be something that, well, it's only worth mailing them once a quarter, or it might be worth mailing them once a month. It's different for every company. But once you mail them on a schedule that's going to be break-even or hopefully revenue-producing for you, you can mail them a couple times a year less frequently, and then when someone purchases, you can move that person over into the active category. So what we're seeing here is that it's the idea of not mailing the inactives at all. It's the idea of mitigating the risk and balancing it with revenue opportunities. And you may find going down the line that, if you've been mailing someone on your inactive list for 5 years and your typical sales cycle is a year, that might be a time to stop mailing to that email address or to decrease the frequency even further. I worked with Hasbro when I was on my own. They were a client of mine for 2 years, and what we did there with the inactives was we actually put them on a schedule where we only mailed them during peak toy buying time, which was pre-summer, pre-Easter, pre-Christmas. And other than that, that file just sort of sat. But we found that if we mailed those times when people were more likely to be purchasing gifts, we could make money on that file. So think about that with your inactives. Rather than totally just not mailing them, think about ways that you can leverage them in a limited capacity to generate money for your organization. The last thing I wanted to talk to you about today was quantifying the nudge effect. I kind of like the term nudge effect, but what it means is the idea that Well, let me do this. I put this in here to explain it. So if someone asks you what email is, a direct response channel, which I think is what most of us think of it as, but also email is a broadcast channel. The answer to what is email is all of the above. And what do I mean by a broadcast channel? Well, what I mean is that in addition to sending that nice email that someone opens and sees that shorts are just $15 and they click through and they buy shorts, you've also got a nudge effect in that the subject line here, and you'll see it here, call us crazy, $15 shorts today only. So as someone who watches my email, perhaps I'm working and I see that subject line come through and I'm too busy to stop because I'm working, I have meetings and I have calls and I'm running around town. But then I get out of my last meeting of the day and I look across the street and there's a loft. And what happens in my mind, I go, oh, shorts are $15 today only, because I saw that subject line earlier. And I have time now. I didn't have time then, so let me go in and see if I can buy some shorts. So that would be the nudge effect, the idea that the person didn't open the email, they didn't click on it, they didn't buy directly from it, but it nudged them to make a purchase. Companies that realize that it's both are adjusting their strategies to incorporate that and think more about their subject lines. They're also looking at their attribution models, which is what I want to talk a little bit about here, to quantify the nudge effect to make sure that those sales get credited to email. So typically when you put together an attribution model, you've got four elements. There's the action that was taken, in this case, whether the email was sent or opened or clicked on. There's the product, there's the time frame, there's the order of touch. So to quantify the nudge effect, what you want to do is do a treated versus untreated A-B split test. So send to half of your email file, don't send to the other half, and then look at the sales that were made. And what I think that you'll see is that there definitely is a nudge effect there. People who got that email are more likely to buy even if they don't click through directly from the email. You want to build this into your hybrid model. This is an example of that kind of a treated versus untreated test. So you can see people with email actually had higher purchase propensity on those days, spent more money. And the last thing I want to show you here is this is just one thing, the work that I've done for clients. I actually, when we're going from a primary to when changing attribution model, I actually like to go to a direct versus indirect. So the idea would be the nudge effect and other indirect sources of revenue, I like to separate them out from the direct being, you know, a click and somebody purchased right from that click. I think that this is a fair way to do it because it gives credit to both. It also emphasizes which is stronger. But it's a kind of a good model to use because it lets you take into account both, but it doesn't kind of commingle them because they are a little bit different. That's really the end of my presentation. I apologize. A half hour goes by so fast. So I put some additional resources in here. I'm just going to click through them. They're more for your reference going forward if you'd like to follow me or my agency on Twitter, if you'd like to read my stuff on ClickZ. We have a newsletter. These are some industry organizations that I think very highly of, so if you're serious about email marketing, you'd want to look into joining them. And again, these slides will be available, so you'll be able to go back and see it. That's a little bit about us. Call me if you want to talk about email. I'm always happy to see if we can help you.
So there's some great content, Jean. Unfortunately, we bowed out of time for questions, although Jean is going to graciously make herself available in the networking lounge. We've gotten some questions in the queue already, but we've run out of time, unfortunately. But like I said, Jean will be in the networking lounge, so if you want to jump over there, she can answer your question in the networking lounge. So I just want to take this opportunity on behalf of Retail Online Integration and SDL, the sponsor of this session, to thank you again for attending this session. If you're interested in discussing anything that you heard during this presentation, we encourage you to visit the networking lounge to chat live with other session attendees. Please also visit the info booth and fill out our new show survey to let us know about your experience today. And remember, if you missed anything today, the entire virtual show will be archived. The on-demand environment will be available for 3 months starting this coming Monday. Have a great day, everyone. Thank you.